All right, good morning, everyone. I just slapped a title up there, so we'll see if it makes sense in the end, right? Right? I've got about, I think, 10 cups of coffee in me right now, so I'm pretty wired. I don't know where I'm gonna be at in the end, but I may get there quick. So we're closing out the year of judgment and burning. I'm fairly accurate in that statement, I think. Just kind of recap, you know, the spirit of judgment and burning is burning away or refining. And it kind of sets us up and preps us for the next thing that's to come, which is what we should be going into, the year of grace and supplication. You know, there have been a lot of, I'm not going to say a lot, but, you know, people have said throughout the network, you know, we've had people over the past year with just interesting things that have come up in their life, you know, different job situations and things like that. Personally, for us, it's been kind of a crazy year with my job since really about February. February, I got moved from what I had been doing for, I mean, officially for about 4 or 5 years, and a portion of that for about 12 years into a different role. And at the time, I was not very appreciative of being moved into the role. It kind of felt like a smaller role. I had fewer subordinates, that type of stuff. And I will get somewhere with this, I promise. But the during the process of me venting my frustration about this, I talked to someone who had retired, and he told me, as soon as I told him what had happened, he said, "Well, it's about time." And I was like, "What do you mean?" And he's like, "Well, we discussed this before I retired a couple of years ago. And there was some concerns that with your winning personality, you'd make some people cry if you walked in there at that time. So they decided to keep you where you were at." And it gets more comical, right? Because one of the things that had come up where I was at that time prior to February were some people crying because their feelings were hurt a little bit. And I move into this other position, and I am the only male. I now have all of the females on the full-time staff work for me, okay? And even on the part-time staff, 100% of my staff is female. Not a single man works for me, right? So I roll into... Well, the males, a few of them were crying. And it was just like two or three that were crying. So I end up in here with all these ladies. And that comes with just different dynamics, right? So after about, I don't know, 2 or 3 months of me being in there, one of them, she's like, "Okay, I gotta know what's going on." It's like, "What do you mean?" She goes, "Well, you know, some of these guys, you know, we're saying that you're very difficult, that you're very hard on them. And, you know, we've been wondering who on this staff is in trouble, and who are you here to get rid of?" You know. I looked at her, I was like, huh? I'm like, "I wasn't brought in here to get rid of anybody." And she's like, "Well, why are these guys crying?" And I was like, "Well, it may say more about them than it does about me. I don't know." I said, "As long as people do what they're supposed to do, we're not going to have an issue, you know." And as time went on, or has gone on, I've been in there, I don't know, since I guess about 10 months now. what actually happened is, even though I supervise a much smaller group of people, I am doing chief of staff functions now, and I actually impact the entire organization. And part of the reason they wanted me in there was to create some organizational changes and things like that. So that kind of helped me out. I got you. You're welcome. The interesting thing about it, right? You know, there was that issue, you know, the people crying about stuff, me moving into a spot that I didn't really want to be in. And then in July we get told, so we were expecting what's the current administration, because during the campaign they had said, hey, you need a Space National Guard, I'm going to give you a Space National Guard. So the expectation is that a Space National Guard is going to stand up. In July, there were conversations between all the directors and Secretary of the Air Force and the Chief of Staff of the Space Force, and we're fully expecting we're getting a Space National Guard, and with that, it's going to build all of this bureaucracy and overhead and stuff like that, and everything's going to be great. Now, the meeting took, from everything we gathered, just a couple of minutes. The Secretary of the Air Force asked Chief of Staff of Space Force, hey, can you take these missions? And he said, yes. And the other guy said, when? And he said, October 1st. And he said, okay, they're yours. So since July, we have been in a pattern of, how does life look for us in the future? You know, where is my employment going to be? And this is where you start really seeing not just something about yourself, but about other people, right? And Adrian and I prayed about it, and we've got our marching orders in the way that we're going to do business. And in the process of some very dark, I don't want to say dark times, but in times where things looked a little bleak, God's just really made some things pretty good for us. And the fact that I'm going to go one way, and I'll be here until I retire, or I'm going to go another way, and I should still be living here and just having to drive a little further to work. But no matter what, we're going to be covered till retirement. Yeah, praise God on that one for sure. But the, I guess comical is a good word. It's probably not a good word, but you have all these other people that are in panic mode, right? And the reason they are panicked is because they have the same type of stuff that gets in this mess. They have wrapped their identity into everything that they are when they're wearing their uniform, and they aren't, they've got nothing else, you know. And prior to us even knowing how we were going to be taken care of, I was having a conversation with one, and I just told him, you know, we've made it to a point in my career where I could retire tomorrow. It's just going to impact when I get to collect retirement. I can walk away from this tomorrow if I have to, because my identity's not in it. And she looked at me, she goes, well, that's kind of hard, don't you think, to not have this as your identity? And when you think about it, you know, you have people that don't believe in God, and that, you know, this person in particular doesn't. And that is where their importance is, it's where their identity is whatever they're doing. And when you are in a profession where everything is presented on you, right? When people walk up to you where I work, you look at them, they got a uniform on, so you know where they work, kind of. They've got rank on, so you know, you actually know how much money they make roundabout. They may or may not have a career field indicator on. And if they've got one on, it's going to tell you what skill level they are. So I can sit there and judge between looking at a couple of different things. And I got a pretty good idea about how long you've been doing the job, how much you know, and all of that. And as you walk around with this stuff on, and you get the respect and the customs and courtesies that are granted to you as you progress throughout, you kind of get kind of an air of confidence from it. You know where your place is, and you do start to build an identity in that. So when people at work sometime get that identity questioned, right? You're questioning the core of their being, you know? And when we look at, in particular, this across this year, and what comes against judgment and burning, it's Leviathan. And Leviathan guards, you know, enemy territories, opposes progress, attacks the loins, blocks truth. He's the king of the children of pride, disobedience to authority, and desire for a limelight. Skilled at the lies, deception, propaganda, entices people to quit, surrender, think of an easier way, discredits leadership, leadership's plan of the Lord by innuendo. And a lot of what I faced in particular was this type of stuff. People insinuating things, or one person who got their feelings hurt, because I told them they couldn't come to meetings because we didn't need them in a meeting. And it hurt their feelings a lot, because I can't make this up, because again, this is how people identify. And that's the whole point here. There are so many people who get wrapped up in what doesn't matter, that if you tell them something silly like, hey, you're more of a worker, we need you here working, which I'm the type, I'd be happy to be out there working on a piece of equipment versus sitting in a meeting listening to people talk. It doesn't go that well, because that's where they're at. You know, they need the meeting. They need to say something. You ever see those people that have to say something in a meeting? You know, they're out there, right? So as we close this out, you know, this year, what I found after I had explained to that individual that my identity wasn't tied up in what I did, I could sense a shift in the atmosphere at work, and things started to improve. Now, granted, we still aren't getting to keep our jobs there as they look, but you know, as far as God being able to use me a little better in the day to day, and even we had the ministry of the pocket Jesus appear by completely by accident. Anya gave me a pocket Jesus. I had it at work one day, and I'm playing with it, and one of the girls asked me about it, and they wanted them, so I bought pocket Jesuses and brought them in. And I got one guy still, every time he sees a pocket Jesus somewhere, it gets credited to me. He saw he sent me a text the other day of a picture of one at a restaurant, Southern Charm. He's like, did you do this? I'm like, no, I didn't. I only give pocket Jesuses to people that ask for them. You know, it's kind of like pearl before swine. You know, I mean, it's rubber, right? It's not really Jesus, but you know, that I'm not going to throw something at you. You know, it's like if somebody gave me a Buddha, right? I had this conversation with somebody the other day. I was like, you know, if somebody gave me a pocket Buddha, I wouldn't appreciate it. And the response to me was, well, why wouldn't you? And it's like, well, I don't believe in that. Yeah, but can't you see the thought behind it? And I said, well, I can understand that whoever thinks of old Buddha here as a wise one, they're thinking something nice, but that's not what I believe. So while I would not necessarily throw Buddha back at him or stomp on him or get offended enough to complain, Buddha would probably go in my pocket till we got home, and he'd get tossed in a trash can. I'd go about my day, you know, because that's what so many people don't get in this world right now, when they're wrapped up in whatever their identity is in, that we believe in one thing and we can't believe in other things. You know, it doesn't work that way. It doesn't mesh. You know, believe in, Adrian and I were talking about horoscopes on the way in, because some people brought that up at work. You know, that does not line up with God. That doesn't line up with Christianity. And people assign value in something, then they start relating it back, you know. So as we move into the year of grace and supplication, and Christmas coming up, I just wanted to talk about a couple of things here. It's not on your sheet, but it's John 1:14. And the Word was made flesh and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. What I liked about this one when I saw this verse, and wasn't enough for me to put down here and do a whole lot of anything in, is it establishes right there, you know, John is saying that Jesus is the Word. Leave that word right there, maybe Rhema. Logos, that's right, Logos. So he is, so when Jesus came to us, he was a foundational Word. That's the truth of God. And he was living among us, or living among us, and the stuff in parentheses, I'm pretty sure that was a King James add-in. But he was, when we talk about he's full of grace and truth, he is that that grace promotion and partnership. He is in himself grace. And I'm going to get this related a little better and untongue-tied here in a minute. But when you think about Jesus and you think about his birth and you think about his death, that was all part of a promotion process for us. That was all fulfilling the ability for us to be able to go direct to God, for us to be taught how to be sons of God, and for us to understand what we should emulate in this world and the priorities that we should make for us in our life. So our first verse here is going to be Zechariah. I said that right? Zechariah? Not Zechariah? Is there Zechariah or is it just Zechariah? Okay. My dad wanted to name me Ezekiel Zechariah when I was born. My mom said I'd never learn how to spell it. That's a true story. In 12:10 it says, "And I will pour upon the house of David and upon the inhabitants of Jerusalem the spirit of grace and of supplications, and they shall look upon me whom they have pierced, and they shall mourn for him as one mourneth for his only son, and shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn." And this is, I have foretelling, but it's prophesying the coming of Jesus. And it speaking here about Jesus coming to fulfill God's purpose, but it's also talking about how they shall look upon me whom they have pierced, and they shall mourn for him. And when I read that right there, you know, you're looking at shall look upon me whom they have pierced, so they have hurt me, and for him they shall mourn. And and shall be in bitterness for him as one that is in bitterness for his firstborn. This is speaking, I think, and anybody's welcome to come up with something better. Wormwood opposes the spirit of prophecy, life, and supply, and it causes sons to fail in grace. And when we're talking about essentially piercing him, we're talking about cutting off and opposing the spirit of grace and supplication. And the when we cut that off, we And when you think about it, when Jesus was crucified and they killed Jesus, leading up to it, nobody was thinking about what they were doing. They were, and what I mean by that, they weren't thinking about the impact or the long-term whatevers. They were thinking about the here and now and how the word that Jesus had brought to them was a word that they didn't want to hear. It challenged the norms. It challenged the Pharisees and the Sadducees. It challenged everything that the people had wrapped their identities with. And it was essentially kind of challenging a new world order. And so nobody could see, well, not nobody. Obviously, there were some believers, but the Jews did not see what he was there to do, and they could not see that he was the Messiah, so they kill him. And essentially, everything that needed to be done started to come about and was done. And when you're sitting there, and what it was that you were trying to bind or to keep for yourself gets undone right in front of you, you've got two ways to handle it. One is to get on the right sheet of music, or to remain in bitterness. You know, the words here for grace and supplication. Grace is hanan. Or I'm sorry, hen. No, that's a line. Hen. And the word for supplications is tahanan. Yes. I wrote them down for you, right? I copied and pasted that. Now, I slid in, indented another one, Hanan, and I did that for a reason. It says to compare to to Shna, properly to bend or to stoop, kindness to an inferior, right? So this is where we get the meaning of grace, or it's implied. And you know, the scholars say this is something that you don't deserve, right? But it's freely given to you, right? We as sons know that that's not true. It is given to us, but the grace is at promotion, and there's, I'm going to say expectation. That may not be a great word, but there's an expectation that you're going to work within that promotion into that new office, you know, and that you're going to perform as God needs you to perform because you've been promoted into that. And what I think is neat is when you look at supplication, and when you look at the root of supplication, you can run it back up there to hen or heen. And, you know, it says earnest prayer, you know, from the root. But it does say at least, well, actually, okay, the stuff in italics, I need to explain that. That's not from Strong's. The other stuff's from Strong's. That stuff that I added from line upon line, it may have some paraphrasing, it may be word for word, it just depends when it got on there. But and that's from the root of grace, meaning a commitment to move forward in his grace to accomplish his purpose. How many times in life do you get promoted in real life where you, we'll say you've earned it, but not earned it. You know what I mean? Or a better word, we promote you on the potential that you're going to be able to handle this. There are some places that do that. I don't think many. When I was working in a private sector, I never got promoted that way. When I was even in some places in the public sector, it was all based on scores and stuff from prior performance. I will say an interesting thing about where I work right now, According to regulation, we promote based on what we believe you can handle next, and then put you into it and expect you to handle it. And that's not always true that it happens that way. But inside of my organization, we've actually used that as an argument against higher leadership to promote people when they said, well, they don't have this, this, and this. And we came back with, well, they meet the requirements. And oh, by the way, we're supposed to promote on potential. Now, that leads to another leadership thought that sometimes people promote one grade above what they can handle. And they'll promote up, and that's where they'll sit because they're not good enough to promote above that. But that could all be flawed. I don't know. But anyway, with God, I'm sorry, I know I'm all over the place. With God, though, God prepares us. When we're talking about this measure of grace and stooping down, this is what has already been spoken of guiding and really providing that mentorship and not moving us beyond what we're able to handle. And the truth is, with God, we can handle all of it. We just got to get out of our own way, you know? You know, when he talks about testing and seeing if you're ready, you know? Millennials are great helicopter parents, is what all the research that I'm reading, and I fall into geriatric millennial. It's true. That's what they call me. But you see it, right? There's something right now for everybody to be afraid of constantly, you know? You know, it's great. You know, when you grow up and your parents talk about, well, as a kid, we never locked the door. Well, at my house, the door is always locked because of home invasions. The number one contributor to home invasions in the U.S. is an unlocked door. Something to think about, right? But number one defense against it's a loaded gun. You know? But what I'm trying to say here is if we're left to our own instincts and things like that, we don't let our children go out and try something, you know. My little brother was telling me about the blood circle. Apparently this is a thing in Boy Scouts. My brother bought his son a knife at a Boy Scout thing or a Cub Scout thing, and he's like, the whole troop lost their mind because he hadn't been through knife training. I'm thinking, he and I are looking at each other and say, cutting yourself was a rite of passage. What are we talking about? And the blood circle is anything I can touch with this knife is too close to me, you know? So this is where we're at, though, as in the natural, right? This is where we're at. But what this does in the real life, this is a real life manifestation of we're not trying. And what I mean by, I'm not talking about trying like trying, I'm talking about like trial, trying. We're not mentoring people, in this case children, properly to be able to understand cause and effect, and that, hey, if I, you know, hold the knife this way, I'm probably going to cut myself, or if I touch the hot stove, I'm going to burn myself. And these are some extremes, but this is what happens when, as a society, we get to buy an end to all the bad and we don't trust what God is saying. And this really, I don't know, a few months ago I was listening to a teaching talking about how God never gives us anything without seeing, you know, trying us first to make sure that we're ready to take on. And it's helped me a little bit. I sit back more now. It's like, okay, I'm going to sit back here and watch the kids. Just, yeah. See what happens. You know, I'm not handing them a toaster and telling them to go to the pool, but you know, but this is how he works, and this is again part of, you know, that grace piece is giving us the task for us to do and for us to move into that next office. Next page. All right. So Luke 1, 28 through 38. There are a lot of words in here, and I'm going to go over quite a few of them. I only highlighted stuff about grace and maybe another word, but I got so tied up in this one section, and then I expanded it. I never do that, but I just was looking at words and really got into them. So a note here, I'll get to that note later. All right, Luke 1:28-38. And the angel came in unto her and said, Hail, thou that art highly favored, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women. And when she saw him, she was troubled at his saying, and cast in her mind what matter of salutation this should be. And the angel said unto her, Fear not, Mary, for thou hast found favor with God. And behold, thou shalt conceive in thy womb and bring forth a son, and shalt call his name Jesus. He shall be great, and shall be called the Son of the Highest, and the Lord God shall give unto him the throne of his father David, and he shall reign over the house of Jacob forever, and of his kingdom there shall be no end. Then said Mary unto the angel, How shall this be, seeing I know not a man? And the angel answered and said unto her, The Holy Ghost shall come upon thee, and the power of the Highest shall overshadow thee. Therefore also the holy thing, which shall be born of thee, shall be called the Son of God. And behold, my cousin Elizabeth, thy cousin, not mine, not Gabriel's, she hath also conceived a son in her old age, and this is a 6th month with her, who was called barren. For with God nothing shall be impossible. And Mary said, Behold, the handmaid of the Lord, be it unto me according to thy word. And the angel departed from her. So yeah, now that's a lot. But this is, you know, this is where God's coming down and he's telling her she's about to have his baby. And this has to be just a really interesting moment in your life, especially back then. You know, it's like, who's going to believe me? You know, it's like, yeah, that is the way. That's a way to go claim that I was doing it. Yeah. Anyway, but that's not what happened, right? Because Joseph was visited, you know, I kind of foretold some stuff about Elizabeth there. And this is, you know, the story of the beginning for Mary. Mary is a name that when you root it back to Hebrew, I think it's Miriam. It means rebellious. And it's not real important, but it is kind of interesting, right? The rebellious one found favor. The word hell is Cairo, and the root of grace, and it's meaning to rejoice. When it says thou art highly favored, it is kairito, and that roots back to Kairos, which this is to endue with a special honor. So he's, you know, he's calling her up, he's telling her, you know, you should rejoice. But it's not just rejoice, it is rejoicing in partnership with God. And because of her partnership and her life and stuff, she is favored. She has a place of honor, and this honor is being bestowed upon her. Blessed is eulogio. And when we're looking at that, you know, Gabriel's telling her, how cool is it that an angel came down and told her, here is your purpose. You know, And we can all like surmise and figure out what our purpose is, but she got it kind of like handed to her. She cheated a little bit. I mean, granted, she did have to birth and then watch her child get killed, but so when she saw him, that's Edo. So when she saw him and she properly understood what was going on there, and she was troubled at his saying, and saying there is logos. And I think when this first came up, what was common to her, she knew that he was giving her the purpose of God. He knew that what he was saying were foundational truths, and it was just a lot to take in at that moment. And the angel said unto her, "Thou hast found favor." And then found is eurisko. And when we go back and we look that one up, it is it's not just to come upon or to find. It is to come upon after you've been searching for something. And this is kind of preparing the way for grace. When you think about supplication, and when, you know, when we see in the Bible prayers and supplication, when at one point I was wondering about that. How are those two different, right? Well, it's two different Greek words, and it's two different, I'm assuming it's two different Hebrew words, but prosuke and I just dumped the other word. Maybe it'll come back to me in a minute. Prosuke is prayer, and supplication is something else. Diesis, you're right. That is it. So, diesis in supplication is partnership, and that's based on assignment. We're requesting someone to accept a burden, and that yields to prosuke. So it's a commune with God, going after the a particular assignment or plan. And when we look at prosuke, on the other hand, that is proactive and forward thinking, and that is like an action type prayer based on what was revelation from supplication. An example of prosuke would be when Jesus is telling the Pharisees when he gives them the Lord's Prayer, and he's talking about when you pray, go into the closet, things like that, and speaking forth the will of God, versus a pointed partnership to do something that you have been promoted into, if that helps clear that up. Charis, which is favor, comes from Cairo, and its graciousness or gratifying. So when it says that she has found favor, the way I read this is she was already seeking out to partner with the Father, and that was her promotion with God, was to bear Jesus. And he told her, "He shall be great. It'll be so great. We're going to call him Jesus. He's going to do great things. And he's the Son of the Highest, because he's my son." But when we get down to, when we read through this, there is something that I picked up out of this that I don't know if it was communicated effectively or if it wasn't communicated at all till after the death of Jesus. But in this, it says, And he shall reign over the house of Jacob forever, and his kingdom, and of his kingdom there shall be no end. That one statement right there should have told every Jew that this was not a kingdom on earth. Because it doesn't end, right? They're not planning on him dying like a regular person. His rule is forever, you know. Now, absent the crucifixion, right? The crucifixion is part of the plan, so I'm not saying that God didn't plan for him to get crucified. But that was necessary for his rule or his reign over the kingdom of God. And I'm sorry. The sign language is going. But yeah. So in this, you know, he told Mary, God told Mary the whole plan. I mean, there were some details left out, right? About how we were going to get there, but he explained to her right there, you're going to birth my child. This is your purpose. He is going to be the Messiah. He's going to be the king of everything forever. And, you know, again, we put our identity where we put our identity. We put our beliefs where we put our beliefs, and we get it all wrapped up. And things that were said or weren't said are written and weren't written. And we don't grow, right? That's what was happening essentially with the Sadducees and the Pharisees. You know, I still find it incredibly interesting that the Pharisees believed in the written and the oral words, and the Sadducees only believed in the five written Moses books, right? The Pentateuch. So it's like the Pharisees were, I don't know, like the liberals or the rebels compared to the Sadducees, and then the guys who would believe more just couldn't believe this. And it all goes back to the enemy coming in and getting their identity and their purpose all wrapped up in their control and their status and wearing their uniforms or their garb and their money too, right? They had life pretty decent, and who is this guy to tell them that they needed to change? When it's talking about the holy thing, I just found that neat. That's I believe that's Hagios. Right there. I'm sorry. Yes. Most important, most holy thing. But when we go on down here, for with God nothing shall be impossible. It took the scholars for King James one word. It took the Greeks three words to say this. Oi. O-U, which is an absolute negative. Pos is anything, which is the second word, which makes sense, right? A negative of anything would be nothing. But there's one more word, according to word search, and it's rhema. And, you know, rhema, the divinely inspired word of God for a specific moment. And when you sit there and you start to think about, well, why, how did that one get left out? You know, is it nothing shall be impossible, or is it nothing shall be impossible for this divinely inspired word for this moment? Or a better way to say that is, when we are partnering with God in His Word, in His timing, nothing is impossible. Everything is possible. And then Mary said, "Behold, the handmaid of the Lord, be it unto me according to thy word." And the word here for word is rhema. And the angel departed from her. Everything in this, you know, that again, the easy stuff, this is Gabriel coming down, this is the Son of God, He's coming, you're going to give birth to Him. But this was where, this was Mary's, and this may not have been the only one, but this was a big point of grace and promotion for Mary right here. And this is where she was commissioned to carry this child. Could you imagine if she said no? I think she had the choice. It hadn't happened yet. He said it was about to happen. There was no shadows yet, you know. But she didn't. She confirmed that she was a handmaid of the Lord, and according to this rhema word, let it be. And I'll figure out stuff because I'm betrothed to Joseph. We'll figure that out. We'll figure out what all my family and friends are going to think. That's going to come on the backside. But she was ready right then, in an instant, to commit to having the baby, having God's baby, having that responsibility of the little 3-pound, 6-pound, 3-ounce baby Jesus, and feeding it and caring for it and getting it grown. Now, can you imagine the next thing? You're going to give birth to the Son of God, right? Or if you're Joseph and you're married, or you're going to marry the woman that's given birth to the Son of God, and you got this kid that's got that direct relationship, knows everything already. That's an humbling experience, isn't it? You know, he's, it's like, man, he's, you know, and it was neat, but I'm sure it was one of those moments where everybody had to pray about it, you know, and Joseph had to pray about it. He was visited by an angel, and they had to search themselves about it. What it didn't say was how long it took them. Maybe it was an instant. Maybe it was an instant. Are you ready? Are we ready to act in an instant when God speaks? You know, God, I got to pray about what you just asked me, you know? Or are you hearing right? You know what I mean? Have you finally tuned yourself where you are hearing right? You know? Are we spending? I don't know the best way to say it. We'll just say we. I'm going to switch to we. Are we spending time in prayer? Are we spending time in supplication as we get moved into these new positions? We get promoted into what comes for the future. Everything that has been burned off or burned in or burned away leading up to what's next, right? Because it's not just every year, right? We got burned this past year. 2025 was burning. This year is going to be cool. We're going to be supplicating. And I don't even know if that's a word, and gracing it up. No, it's all going to continue to happen. However, it has to happen, right? The continual refining process. And that's where I will admit, a little envious on some of these guys for at least the way it's written, knowing exactly what to do immediately and being ready to act. But the only way that we get there is through prayer. It's through intercession and spending that commune with the Father. Beelzebub comes against the spirit of grace and supplication. He's responsible for the coordination of demonic supply. He's over the general army of the enemy. He works to hinder promotion by blocking supply. He knows how to bring corruption, division to the church, and fighting against that. You must protect unity. It's, you know, we protect the supply lines. That's where the prayer comes into place, and understanding in the spiritual what God is saying, understanding what the picture is, you know. And also in the natural, being able to, you know, it's so easy to know somebody, and still, because you got your feelings hurt a little bit about whatever, get really aggravated with them, and you know that's not their heart, right? You know that's not where they're coming from. And that's where you see division and stuff come in, from misunderstandings or things like that. So I think when you think about it, and as elementary or as old, I mean, the book where I got that piece from, I think was like 20 years old, that this good information to bring to the forefront. What is it that's coming after you and attacking you, and why, or attacking us, and being able to identify what it is, and how do we counter that, you know? What can you speak into the atmosphere? What, you know, to change it? Because, you know, everything that manifests here on earth is a manifestation of something that's happened in the spirit anyway. So you're not going to fix it on your own. You know, we have to really rely on God. And as that point of promotion and things like that, we have to... We're being promoted based on our potential to be better at something. So that's all I have.